Hello and welcome to another episode of Growth Coaching International's Coaching in Education podcast. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and if you follow our podcast episodes as they are released, you'll remember our last episode, which featured Justine Smythe and her journey in amalgamating three existing primary schools into one. It was an incredible story of coaching through change. In this episode, we continue the theme of new schools. However, this time, the focus is on coaching through growth. Today, I have the privilege of talking to Joe Camzato, principal of Beaman Secondary College in Truganina in Victoria, Australia. As we record this episode in December 2023, Joe is literally weeks off opening the doors to both the junior and senior campuses of this brand new school, which has come about not to facilitate the amalgamation of existing schools, but in response to rapid population growth in the area. Joe, it's an absolute pleasure to have you join me on the podcast today.
Thank you, Richard. Nice to be here.
Pleasure is all mine, Joe. Really looking forward to the conversation today. Joe, with a surname Camzato, I'm intrigued to hear a little bit more about your background and your journey into education so far.
Yes, well, my family was the classic migrant story to Australia. One branch of the family actually arrived in Australia in the 1920s and established themselves in Adelaide in South Australia. And then my father was one of those very groovy post-war migrants in Australia with a nice one suit who liked to drink coffee. And he arrived obviously in the 50s. So that's my background. But, you know, on my mum's side, we've nearly been here close to 100 years, which is quite mind-blowing now for me. And, you know, I started off not wanting to be a teacher. I actually wanted to be an actress and a performer, which was quite abhorrent to my migrant, hardworking family. And I had to keep that a secret for a while. And I think I told them I was going to be a lawyer. That kept them all quiet. But secretly what happened, I ended up auditioning and getting into a drama / community theatre type degree. And I chose drama teaching because and theatre studies and English literature, because I felt that was an acceptable way of doing what I loved doing, but it made my migrant family calm and happy because I was going to be a teacher and that would mean I'd have a job and earn a living. So that was the beginning, really. But I had no intention of staying in education for very long. I did not want to be one of those, I'm sorry if I offend people, but aging drama teachers who are still doing school musicals and finding that it's harder and harder. They're getting more tired and they've stopped doing amateur theatre or they're still doing amateur theatre. I just didn't see myself doing that moving into the future. And I then realised I enjoyed studying and I went back to study psychology. So I began with an undergraduate degree and I went to postgrad studies and then a master's degree in educational psychology. And I did this all part-time where I studied full-time because, you know, the migrant imprint is in me. You must earn a living. So at no time did I ever stop working. I just kept working away in my teaching job and studying at night and giving up school holidays and online courses, anything I could do to continue to do my studies with the idea that I would leave and become a private practicing psychologist and have a much sort of calmer life. Maybe I'd work part-time for myself and in a clinic. And that was my sort of vision. Instead, I promoted in education. I began sort of working in student wellbeing, working with a lot of young people that had complex learning needs, but also complex emotional needs. And I sort of entered middle management in that area and even the assistant principal class, the principal class with that brief, until a very wise principal said to me, oh, I think one day you're going to be a principal or you could be a principal and I want you to move across into teaching and learning again, back into curriculum and support and coach the teachers. And I just said, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to be a principal. I actually want to be I want to leave education. So I kept saying this, Jim, I want to leave education and I want to be a psychologist. I was a psychologist by then anyway, a registered one. But I kept saying, no, that's not what I want to do. But here I am. That's what I ended up doing because obviously he was kind of a bit wise and right in this particular situation where the skill set of listening to people and understanding them and how they learn did translate straight across to adults. And I suppose I was involved in school improvement and putting in instructional frameworks, but coaching to that and supporting staff, making them feel that they could achieve things. And then suddenly, I don't know how, I became a principal. And I do embrace that role now, but it's been an interesting journey.
It's been fantastic. And just listening through those different pieces that you've described, Jo, I mean, family name now 100 years in Australia, so, you know, well settled in. And I appreciate that, you know, the migrant element, thinking about, you know, I've got to keep earning, and a real determination to study, you know, part-time on top of your actual job, which is terrific. But isn't it interesting, I mean, the number of people that I talk to, you know, on this podcast and beyond this, who are in school headship but had never, ever planned on being there, you know, and even not just the early days, but even in the middle years of their career, still no real notion of getting into headship. But isn't it funny, I mean, we're talking about coaching and education, and a big job of a coach is to notice when you're talking to other people and how you relate to other members of staff, noticing other people's strengths. And it's interesting how other folks have noticed that potential headship role in you when it wasn't actually your goal from an early stage. And here you are in headship, and as you say, you know, fully embracing the role and clearly doing a terrific job. And that brings us right up to today, Jo, which is terrific. And it would be great for our listeners, you know, just to hear a little bit about the position. I mean, literally the position that you're in right now, a few weeks from the end of the school year. You folks work through to December time. You're ready to take the keys of a brand new school. And it's important to note, it's across two campuses. So what genuinely does this scene look like just now?
So just now, there are two campuses. There is nothing in them. I've been on one. So I've been on one earlier this week, and I've put something in a cupboard in my office. And we literally walked around and danced around the staff room a little bit because it's quite large. It's built for capacity of at least 1,200, but then with some few more buildings coming on site in the next year, up to 2,000, wow. 16 to 18-year-olds. So there are very large structures in place. So I danced around the staff room a little bit and sort of thought, what am I doing here? And I then did sit down in my office with my assistant principal and did a bit of work. And then we left. Then I haven't seen the second campus for 6 weeks, and we're going there on Tuesday. And then we finish work for this year on Wednesday. So really it's they're just empty buildings. And people get very excited about new schools, but my, you know, philosophy too is you can teach under a tree very successfully. The schools are it's great to have these structures. Please don't get me wrong. And I think it's important that young people are given the best opportunities that we can give them. But at the end of the day, it's the people inside the buildings that make the school community and the school, and it's the students and our interaction with each other. So it does feel a little bit daunting right now. But I have to be careful what I say, because as you understand, Richard, as the principal, I'm expected also to role model that I do know what's going on and what's coming, yes. Which I do. It's full of opportunity. I suppose that's another way of looking at it. And a lot of my thinking over the last 6-9 months has been, what will I do here? And this is also because I had the privilege of opening another new school. Mm-hmm. 6.5 years ago. And before that, I was involved as an assistant principal with another new school. Okay. And I think for me, it's about, what can I do differently? What did I learn from last time? How do we block out what we need to do in the middle of January when pretty much everyone is still on holidays here in Australia? Yeah. And normally schools would not go back, not the whole sort of principal team in the middle of January. We take it a little bit easy. But that's not the case this time. A lot of things have to be in place all the way through, from the logistics of the first few days when our staff come on board. They don't know where they're sitting. They've had one tour of one campus. And our students, I've had to do a lot of things off-site. So we had a very short half a day student orientation day, but it wasn't a normal day for students in the sense that we talked to them in a gym that belongs to another school. They got to meet a few teachers, not all of them. The year sevens, which is our 12, 13-year-olds, were able to go off and do some circus workshops and begin that process of building relationships and getting to know people. But our older students, that was a bit tricky. They're not really interested at 15, 16 to do, you know, things that aren't to make them look not cool for school. And so it was really a lot of talking at them, which I hate. So they're going to see everything for the first time, and there'll be a lot of, I think, a big period of adjustment for everyone, including the principal. I've got two officers, and I have to think about that space as well. And people might say, that's awesome. There are a lot of principals that have multiple offices on multiple campuses. But for me, it's about, well, I'm trying to establish school culture and relationships, and I need to be present and visible, but also balance that with looking after myself, so I'm not constantly driving from one place to another and looking frazzled like I've just arrived.
Yeah. You'd mentioned in the planning meeting the distance between the two schools, Joe, just to give everybody a wee bit of context, because you've got two campuses.
Yes, it's 1.6 kilometres. So it's not very far. There are jokes that I should get a scooter or a Vespa, or if I was a runner, I could just run, but no one wants to see a perspiring principal. So they are close, and there's definitely the challenge of making sure that we're one school, even though we're two campuses. And I have students and staff obviously coming from a whole range of different settings and school cultures, and also very multicultural group of students. So I've been trying to sort of really talk about already. For me, language is very important. You have many cultures, but we will be one school culture, and your individual cultures are your strength.
I think a key word you mentioned there, Joe, is that word potential. And also opportunity. And I suppose, you know, when we're thinking about coaching as a topic of conversation, you know, as a coach, you know, again, a key role that we have in a coaching conversation is to help the coachee see potential in themselves, potential in scenarios they're coming up to. And again, it's all about forward looking and about the positive. And yes, it's, I'm sure, a hugely daunting task to have two campuses and that number of students, you know, building up to 2,000 students over the next period of time is very daunting. But as you say, there's huge potential there, you know, to get in there and create, I suppose, as you say, one culture. When we were chatting in our planning meeting, Joe, you really captured my attention describing the connections between your interest in directing. So you mentioned your interest in drama earlier on today. So your interest in directing and coaching. Can you share a bit more with us how you see those two relate?
Yes. When I actually used to teach drama and theatre studies and, you know, direct plays at schools and youth theatre and community theatre, sometimes parents would come and see me at parent interview night, for example, and ask me why should their child continue to do this subject? And I really, as a young teacher, didn't know how to explain why their child should continue to do their subject. I mean, I used to say things like group dynamics, socialisation. It all sounded a bit wishy-washy. But I have to say, sometimes, you know, my experiences working with actors and performers backstage or front of house have actually given me so many skills that I use as a principal, combined with my studies in psychology. And maybe people don't really think about it in this way, but see, when you put on a play or put on anything, you cast, you usually audition. So it's not dissimilar to a job interview. In fact, an audition goes a lot longer than a job interview. Some job interviews for teachers are 30 minutes. So in 30 minutes, you're making an assessment. You have to see into the person, if you like, through their words and through their CV, and see what potential this person can bring and what are their qualities and how they're going to contribute to student growth. So, you know, casting a play with young people is very similar. You know, in schools too, we're trying to be inclusive. So your person that steps forward and says they think they're going to be Macbeth, and I'm going to use Macbeth because it's universal. I could use Medea. I could use any part. You might have to go, yeah, that's kind of not the Macbeth I thought it would be, but maybe that is Macbeth. Maybe this person, I can see something there, and out of this group, I think I could help this person be Macbeth. And, you know, especially with young people, you as a director, you're coaching, you're cajoling, you're looking to tap into their inner experiences. And if they haven't had experiences, you know, what 15-year-old understands what Macbeth is doing? It's all 16-year-old or 18-year-old or 25-year-old. But you need to sort of help them imagine or put themselves in someone else's shoes. And I've also had experiences when I was putting on, you know, performances with young people too, where you would cast someone, they'd be great at the audition. So again, not dissimilar to a job interview.
Yes.
Great. And you think, they're it, you know. I remember one student, he's great. He's it. And then all during the rehearsal process that goes on for 10 or 12 weeks, you're pulling your hair out. You're not ever seeing what you saw in that original audition. And sometimes job interviews are like that too. You think, I saw something. I heard something. We had referee checks. Where is this? Where has this gone? And it is important to have the ability to talk to people and connect with people and find out, you know, what's happening here? Mm-hmm. You know, and I remember saying to the student, what's happening here? And he's like, oh, I'm just saving my energy. And I'm like, I need to see something. I need to see you're going to deliver on the night, so to speak. But you know what? He did. And he was amazing on the night. So sometimes it's also trusting, you know, you have to build that trust with your staff, with young people, that they actually are able to do it. And providing you provide the scaffolding and the skill set, the ability to access the skill set, they'll deliver. Because, you know, it could have gone the other way. He could have not ever delivered what I first originally saw. So for me, this, I find that whole concept of coaching, and I don't even know if that's the right word for what I do, but one of the things and that's what drew me to Gym Night a little bit, to the 5 days I spent doing that instructional coaching framework, was that for me it's connected with the person. You have to consider the person, and they have to consider themselves in order to help them, support them, if you like, find what they need to do, and then provide those tools around them. So very similar to putting on a play and getting the best out of your cast. Sometimes you have to replace actors into a cast that's really solid. How do you do that? How do you make that transition smooth and still make sure the integrity of the show goes forward? And also the interpretation of the show. Now, this happens everywhere, all around the world with the big musicals, you know, that someone else comes in, takes over the part, and their quality assurance checks in a way. But that performer still brings something unique.
I think it's a fascinating comparison, Jo, and I'm really grateful that you've brought this to our attention. You know, that idea of casting people, you know, in a play, and essentially you're doing a similar thing at the moment in that you're employing staff to develop a culture within a school. And you can see the comparisons. Maybe you're onto something new there. Maybe we should be auditioning teachers for the jobs instead of actually just interviewing. I think we could be onto something there, Jo. But that's been really helpful. And genuinely, there'll be people listening today who maybe have an interest in drama, the dramatic arts, and could see some of those connections of skills that they already have and think, you know what, there's elements of coaching that I do in my day-to-day job, which will be, you know, help inspire some folks who are listening, which are terrific. Jo, you have a significant task ahead of you as you open this brand new school. There's no two ways about it. You decided a few months back, and you mentioned it just there recently, to attend the 5-day coach training program at the Victorian Academy of Teaching and Leadership. What would you say are your key takeaways from that experience that have helped you prepare for the task of opening this new school? You alluded a little bit to seeing the whole person. So what would you say was the main thing you took away from that?
Well, probably wasn't one main thing. I think I need to provide a bit of context. I wanted to spend 5 or 6 days just learning something for myself or seeing. I'd heard a lot about this particular framework and I'd read about it, but that's a bit different to actually spending some time in a room with people and focusing on that. And it also allowed me the opportunity to reflect on my previous school and what were the successes and what things I could have done better, especially to help staff in that middle leadership role. We have a role here in Victoria where I work in Melbourne called a learning specialist. And a learning specialist is someone who spends a lot of their time still teaching because they're excellent teachers, but really, they're expected also to coach. But what does that mean? And what I actually, and they do have opportunity to tap into some training. But if I can sort of explain, when you're opening a new school, to send a team of 5 to 8 people off to do 5 days out of your school is actually enormous. In fact, you can't do it. You need that consistency for the students. You need to keep your leaders there to help the staff as they try to settle in, get routines happening, deliver curriculum plan, have support and collaborative planning. So I wanted to think about, well, when would I introduce a coaching model that was had a framework? Because we use that word really loosely. And I was curious enough to sign up. So it wasn't my school holidays, but you've heard that that's something I've done before. So it wasn't really that. Well, I was kind of thinking, oh, I got in because I think everyone else has gone away on holidays. So for me, it was what I took away from it is that we do need to have a shared language. So, you know, when we talk about coaching together, that's layered for me with a lot of work. I think through a psychological lens, there are a lot of things going on in my brain and the way I approach people, what kind of framework I'm using is complex in a way, and I adjust it very quickly. And then you have the whole drama theater thing. And I do want to say conductors do this, choreographers do this, everyone, you know, people do this in many ways in the art. So I wanted to think about if I'm going to set this up and provide this opportunity for my staff in the next, I would say, 2 to 3 years. Next year would really be a foundation year of talking about what we're going to do. How do we plan for training? How can we start? Maybe giving them some snippets of what Jim Knight presented without pretending to be Jim Knight and saying, here's some tools that he used. This is simple. How do you feel about this? We start with this. I wanted to hear what the language was. Did this language ring true to what I believe needs to be tapped into when you're working with teachers? And for me, it did. So that sort of making goals that were relevant to the teacher, using a lot of those, what I would call counseling techniques, active listening, you know, listening for what's really going on, short steps in one go, giving the time to see people and hear people, building a relationship with them. And then, of course, measuring, giving them the opportunity to see if they're achieving things. So building that skill set, finding what they need. So for me, the takeaway was probably that this needs to be planned for. I can't assume that, and I'm not going to assume, I know that, but it's just solidified this, that when you use certain words, they're loaded words. Everyone has, you know, oh, you're going to be coaching, you say to 6 people who are brand new, and they all look at you and shake their head. Okay, great. And they've all had different experiences of what that means. Successful, unsuccessful, boring, dynamic. They may have had some training. Some have had no training. Some have coached a sports team. Not different. But, you know, what are they actually drawing on when I say you're going to be coaching people? So for me, it was about we're going to need to actually put something in that provides people with a shared language. The other thing about this framework is that there's a lot of flexibility there. You can take parts. You can stay with parts. And I didn't hear the word, maybe I was like drifting off, but the focus wasn't student-centered approach. That's a given. We're wanting to develop teachers so they can do their work well. And if their work is being done well, students are going to grow and learn in their classroom. And remember, learn is also loaded. I don't mean just academically learn. I don't mean learn socially, improve their well-being. But some programs or some, you know, I don't want to get into that too much. Some people talk about the student all the time. Well, you have to work with the teacher. That's who we're working with. These are all the things that I took away from that week.
But I think, you know, again, it comes back to that idea of potential. You know, you talk about sitting down with a group of potentially 6 members of staff and you say, you know, you're going to be doing some coaching with some of our members of staff here. And it is really about, as you say, creating a shared language. You know, you're moving into a brand new school, 2 brand new campuses, and you need to have a shared language so that those folks are doing the same thing. They've got the same goals. And I think, yes, I mean, that's been a big takeaway from those 5 days with the academy. You know, if you're, and you're thinking as well about doing it over a measured period of time, it's a sensible period of time. I know Jim Knight would talk about taking things slowly in small steps, and that's key. Because the number of other things you're going to be managing is going to be massive. You know, coaching is going to be one small piece of what you're going to manage in any one day, I would imagine.
Yes. And new schools are very interesting places because, you know, that kind of phrase, sometimes going slow is going faster. You know, that's mm-hmm. true. Mm-hmm. But sometimes in new school, going slow is just way too slow. You have to actually get things moving because you have to create that in order to make sure that something else happens, you know. And so it's a really interesting balance. And I also know that we can't do everything at once. So if you've got, I was counting actually because I'm thinking of myself selfishly. I have 11 people in my school who have stepped up into a leadership role, who've not done the leadership role they've stepped up into. Now, that might not seem like a lot, but we have 40 teachers so far. So 11 of the 40 are in a middle or senior leadership role that they haven't done before. That is a lot because the person who could possibly be their main coach could be me. And so I always think these layers through. At the same time, I don't believe that I can do this on my own, which is why I was also thinking about, well, what will I do in the first year? Then how can I help them in the second and third year? So with the sort of principal class members, I've already sort of the one person who started working with me in July, she's already got a coach for herself. So her own individual coach through the academy. And she has an opportunity to talk to that person once a month or fortnightly, I think. I think they determine what it is. And I will be saying that to the same, the others. There's another four. I suggest very strongly that you get yourself someone else to talk to and to work in whatever area you want to, along with me. But I've got a lot of things to do. I've also introduced into the mix a retired principal who does facilitate workshops at the Victorian Academy of Teaching and Learning, and he's come along and run a day for us and met the principal class members, and he will continue to be one of our people that come to us. And, you know, because it's not about just always sending people out, it's about this network of relationships that I'm trying to build to support the leaders to continue their professional and personal growth. And that's what I mean by it has to be about the person. If you're getting better at something, it's because you're personally growing as well. The two for me are intertwined. And, you know, sometimes you hear people say you shouldn't take things personally. I get that. And I've learned to be, you know, better at that. But that seems to me a little bit weird sometimes because it's more about how do you emotionally protect yourself and, you know, how do you understand that you could see this as a learning opportunity? But the professional and the personal are interlinked, aren't they? Otherwise, are you really bringing your authentic self to work? And I think in schools, you have to be your authentic self with students because they will see straight through you. Whatever your authentic style is, that's not an issue. But they know, and that's how they choose who they think is a good teacher or not. It's who sees them for who they are and who brings their authentic self in a professional way into the learning space.
Jo, over the years as a principal, what would you say has been one of the biggest challenges that you've had to deal with? So you've opened one school already when you've assisted with one and then opened one yourself, and this is now essentially the third school you've been involved in. What would you say is one of the biggest challenges you've had to deal with where a coaching approach has been the most effective way to deal with it?
Look, two or three things come to mind. Sometimes it's when you talk to staff and you say, we're going to embrace coaching, we're going to do learning walks, peer observations, and you see this kind of closed down look happening on their faces and you know they haven't had a good experience.
Yes.
Or they have felt a little bit vulnerable in that space. Maybe not enough trust has been built. People haven't got to know each other. the leaders of the school. I'm very much about sharing. I normalize things a lot. You know, I will say it's okay to feel flustered in these first few weeks. We're all trying to understand where things are. It's okay to feel a little bit nervous about someone coming into your classroom, but they're not just going to come into your classroom. We're going to talk about this. I also try to connect it up with people that they can understand. So whether it's an arts example or and we've discussed this before too, you know, I'll say, you can be excellent at what you do and you still need a coach. So let's talk about Roger Federer. Let's talk about these sporting people that have, you know, hit the top of their game, but they're still coached and they have multiple coaches. They don't have one, and it takes a while to come back from injury or when they're being rehabilitated. So we talk about these things openly, and that's the way I lead discussion, so that people feel that this is okay. This is about learning. So the challenge is about getting through that preconceived notion of what coaching is. Sometimes early career teachers are really embracing of it. Yeah, I want people to come in. I want to talk to someone. I want help. I want, you know, whatever it is. Sometimes again, it depends what's happened for them. The other challenge is to coach, or when you're supporting or mentoring, because, you know, these words are always interesting to me, people who obviously are not having a good time in their life at the moment. Because again, if you're having some well-being issues or mental health issues, and it could be because there's someone very sick in your family, it could be because you yourself take certain medication and it's not working for you, then it's, you know, you've got, you know, something else is going on. And it is a delicate situation where hopefully if there's enough work done on trust and you give people enough space, it's not that I want to know everyone's private world, I don't, yeah. But you'll find if you ask the right question, you know, I'll just pick a random name, you know, Candy, I've known, you know, just not yourself, like what's happening? And, you know, they might say, oh, I know, I do want to do this. I do want to improve this skill. And I know I agreed to it, or I've reached out for it, but at the moment someone is sick in my family and this is what's happening. And you go, right, well, we need to talk about this and not be afraid to put it on pause. You can't learn things or really work on something when you have something going on for yourself. And again, that's my other lens. The other place that I probably use coaching is with parents. Probably one of the other most challenging things in new schools, or any school, I think, is working with parents who can be upset, who are angry at the world, not necessarily you, but you're an easy person to come in. The institution is still open to them. In Australia, you can walk into a school. There are many places you can't walk into. You know, you can walk into the school and say your bit. I find, and sometimes their children are, you know, really needing a lot of support. The family just doesn't know what to do next. So trying in a way to coach parents, I do this over a series of meetings, because sometimes it's the same parents you're meeting, and trying to build their capacity, but also acknowledge when they're doing well. And we probably haven't talked about that enough, you know, giving people a lot of positives, but specific positives, you know, that's really good parenting, Richard, that you had the courage to actually take away the phone. Well done. And the parent will go, oh, thank you. I listened to what you said. Well, it doesn't matter if they listen to me or not. But, you know, you're trying to drop these things. Have you thought about taking away the phone? You own the phone. Or empowering the parent the same way you empower the teacher and the leaders. So while we're talking, my principal team who have stepped up into assistant principal roles are working on their own back at the school. It's sort of that sort of gradual release of responsibility, if you like. I've set the tasks and I will check in. I said, I'm not there. You'll be fine. This is now what you're doing. And they're like, great. Yeah. You know, allowing them to make the mistakes, but then to give that positive feedback or constructive feedback.
I think that's really helpful, Jo, particularly because, you know, quite often conversations on the podcast, you know, focus on staff, focus on pupils, and it's very important to focus on those groups. But quite often we sort of overlook parents sometimes. And I think that idea of, you know, using some of those coaching skills in scenarios where you're talking to parents is actually very, very beneficial. Because again, that's going to have an impact on the pupils, on the students in the school. So it's going to have that ripple effect, which I think is really helpful for listeners particularly. Jo, looking ahead into the new year, once you get things up and running in this new school and the months start to roll by, how do you hope to sustain and develop the team across the two campuses? Any thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, we've got to take a step back because I've already been front-loading them. So what I mean by that is I mentioned that my assistant principals, who are still working at another school, have taken 2 days out to work together. They've already had 2 days out earlier to work with me and a different facilitator. I have also had the 6 learning specialists out working together. I've had a whole school staff induction day working together. So this all sort of lays down the foundation of how we will work and the language that we start to use with each other. You're absolutely right, though. The challenge is that the determination for me too is that this is 2 campuses, but we are 1 school and we're not having, so there's some symbolic things. We have to consider where we will meet and making sure there is some equity across the campuses. Now, I'm not saying everyone's driving back and forth every night after school, but it might be, you know, the first 10 weeks we're at this campus and the second 10 weeks we're at the other campus. And this is also because in the first 2 or 3 years, there's not enough staff just to say, you're only based on 1 campus. And I don't like that anyway. I think people need to have the option to move if they want to. The other thing is around symbolic gestures, like you're not going to be sitting in an office on your own somewhere in this huge school and away from the bulk of people. So I've already said to staff, I will be working out where you sit. So it's like casting the desk.
Yes.
And they've all looked at me and I said, you know, because this is why. We need to be with each other. You need to hear what's going on. We don't want people feeling they're not coping, starting to isolate themselves, remove themselves, go to their office. We're in this huge school across 2 campuses and we don't know how you're traveling. We need to see you. And, you know, I also acknowledge, of course, if you're teaching visual arts or you've got to stack the kiln for ceramics, you might hang out in the office in there a bit, but you belong, we belong together. So it begins with that. And that's also around building trust. So I will continue to do more sort of trust building activities. It's not any weirdo drama games. A lot, many people will remember those. But, you know, again, pitched at the right level, they have a purpose. When you develop a cast for a show or a film or an orchestra, whatever you're doing, you're actually building trust. And that's very important in new schools. You know, doing what you say, but also getting to know people in a professional manner and what they're happy to tell you about themselves. And then, of course, opportunities to, I suppose, connect through the work. So that collaborative planning, the ability to provide feedback on structures because we're putting them in place. How is this working? Whether it's through, we haven't even talked about sort of the use of surveys and small group discussions, which I often do. I don't do big staff meetings unless we're learning something or interacting. It's about, well, what, you know, give me some feedback through these small groups. So these are the ways. And then also searching for appropriate professional learning that staff, some staff might need to already begin. And I've already planned for a couple of educational consultants to come into the school. So one in the maths numeracy space and one in the English literacy space. And I've worked with them before. And what they do is they work with the leaders that are in those areas and then maybe also, I suppose, role model a form of coaching or, again, that guidance, that gradual release of responsibility because we can't always go out. We have to have good quality people coming in, but we build relationships with these people. It's not that old model. You pay someone thousands of dollars. They come in, they do something and they go away and you're left to implement it. We know what happens there. Unless you've got a great person driving the implementation, it can crash. It's about always building for me that layer of relationship, the trust, and that way we can have open discussion too about what's working and what's not working.
I think you're right. And, you know, as you, I suppose, move through, we talk about the next sort of 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, getting that balance, I suppose, between the two campuses is going to be, you know, it's going to be a challenge, but it's good to have that as a significant goal. And you said earlier on, you know, Joe, you're not going to get it perfect all the time.
No
and being
way.
Open and transparent about that, I think, is key, is absolutely key. Finally, Joe, what's next for Joe Camisato? As you continue your journey into the world of education, what direction would you like to be headed in?
I really have no idea, Richard. So again, I'm one of those people. I'll tell you what I'd like to do, which has got nothing to do with education. I'd like to go and learn how to be a glass blower in Venice, where my family originally came from, but that's not going to happen right now. And maybe go and live there a little bit. Look, I'm one of those people that you mentioned at the beginning. I have applied for positions, absolutely, and won technically those positions. But generally, most of the time, I wasn't looking. Someone has always called me or texted me or emailed me and said, hey, are you interested in this? I noticed this role. I think you'd be really good at it. Or my colleague at this school has put up this position. You could be really good at it. Or how about these new schools? Have you thought about that? And I've gone, no, I don't want to do another school. And so, you know, and then I think about things and I go, oh, maybe, you know, maybe that's a good idea. Maybe I'll give it a go. What have I got to lose? So I don't know. I'm very open to that, very open to what will happen next. And I'm also very aware sometimes the opportunities come along, not when you expect them. There's a lot of truth in that saying. And you have to be brave enough to go, okay, I'm going to give it a go. Because this might not come along for another 2 years and I'm ready. I can do it. And you're never ready. I should take that back. You're never ready. You're just ready enough. And you have to, and if you, I suppose, have good people around you. So I have a coach who no longer coaches me, but I sometimes text her and I say, oh, you know, this is what's happening. Now we talk about traveling to Italy. So that's good. We have a shared, shared topic. But sometimes I still reach out to her, but she coached me for 3 or 4 years. And there were times I never felt ready, but you just have to have someone just give you that little bit of a nudge. I'm not going to say push. I'm going to say nudge.
But I think, Joe, I mean, listening to your story today, that has worked well for you. You know, you haven't actively gone out and sought specific roles. You know, they have come your way at the right time and people have given you a little nudge or just turned you in that direction to notice them. And I think, you know, it goes back, I come back to that lovely comparison with casting, you know, for your show. You know, you look back through your career to date, you know, you've been casting now for years and you're casting at the moment for this new school at Beaman College. And, you know, you'll be continuing to make those little tweaks from the director's chair across those two campuses, which I think is very, very exciting. And I think it's very encouraging for your staff, you know, for your team to know that that's your approach. And it's been just lovely today to hear and recognise those links between casting and directing and actual coaching. And it's, I suppose, the psychology behind it. That's going to be really, really helpful for all of the listeners. Joe, this conversation has been a real joy for me today, and I'm very grateful for your time, especially considering the tumultuous task that you have ahead of you in the next few months. Thanks for your openness and honesty when talking through your experiences in leadership so far, sharing how your coaching skills have played a key part in you having such an impact on the members of your school communities over the years. I really want to wish you well as you embark on a whole new chapter in your leadership journey, and I'm confident that your team is in great hands. For our listeners, whether you're leading through significant change at the moment or there is significant challenge up ahead, I'm sure Joe's story today will have been both informative and also inspirational, as we have been able to see the benefits of a coaching approach to leadership. Can I take this opportunity to encourage you, the listener, to visit the GCI website, where you can access a significant number of other podcast episodes and useful coaching resources. I look forward to joining you all on the next episode of Coaching in Education, where theory and good intentions meet reality.